Good morning. This is Good Medicine is Cheaper Medicine. This is the radio program we have from Gabriel Cancer Center. I'm Nash Gabriel, and with me is Shelley Wrench. Our program is always about almost medical economics. And Shelley, again, good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Today, we're going to talk about, does it matter if an individual is wealthy or not in regards to their health care and how long they live and their longevity? Does it also matter if the society is wealthy or not? And so it's two pronged attack on the topic.
Right.
Does money matter? Now, people always say money is not everything. You can't buy happiness with money. You can't buy. But actually, I think you're going to prove today that you actually can be more healthy if you have a few pennies in your pocket.
Well, of course. I mean, if you don't have enough money to make your copay to go see your physician, you are more apt to, well, you do. You stay at home. You get worse. You end up in the ER. Well, that eliminates your copay. Now, you know, the insurance company takes care of the whole thing. And, of course, we know if once you go to the ER, that's a reception desk for the hospital. You're going to have a whole lot of things done to you that possibly shouldn't have been done, and the outcomes are going to be worse. I mean, that's a whole basis of good medicine is cheaper medicine. When you go to the hospital and you have all those extra testing done, the outcome is...
So that's profound. That's really profound. In the last 10, 15 years, there has been an exponential rise in the healthcare costs. And in fact, policymakers on the government side, insurance industry payers, they never talk about lowering the cost of healthcare. They talk about shrinking the growth, meaning
bending the cost curve.
Bending the cost curve, meaning instead of the healthcare costs rising by 6% a year, how can you make it like 4%? Because of that, employers and payers immediately reacted by saying, "Okay, let's shift the cost to somebody else. Who else is there? The employee." So all of a sudden, the idea of employee paying a big chunk of either the premium, or they have spent so much out of pocket over a year, or for every service provided, they have to incur a few pennies, a few dollars, or all the three together, which is almost in all the plans.
Right.
The question is, what is that doing to the health of the individuals?
Making it worse.
Because the average, what's the average annual out-of-pocket nationwide?
Oh, it's all over the place. I mean, people can choose, like mine now, I chose it, was $500. I used to have $12,000.
$500 out-of-pocket?
Out-of-pocket.
That's very cheap, by the way.
Right.
That's very low.
But it's in a fantastic program, which is not really health insurance. It's Christian sharing with your health costs. So that's
the difference. Oh, the Liberty Health Share.
Liberty Health Share.
Yes.
But before, with my regular insurance, which was not, you know, sponsored by, you know, our employer, by Gabriel Cancer Center, it was individual. I individually chose $12,000 to be my out-of-pocket per year. But my cost was $212 and was going to go up to like $900 based on the new Affordable Care Act.
So the bottom line is when people have a big portion of the healthcare contributed from their own pocket. You know, you and I probably wouldn't. It doesn't matter, right? We have money. But how about the factory worker who makes, let's say, $20 an hour? What does that translate into? $45,000 a year? If you make $20 an hour? $45,000. If the out-of-pocket is $5,000, that's
huge.
So what do people do? Well, of course, people like us, we try to help such patients by getting them patient assistance, by getting them, charity, foundation
money, yeah.
Free drugs. We try the best because we do realize if patients don't take their medications, things don't go well, especially the important medications, by the way. Because we have to qualify that, because there are some people who take a lot of medications that they don't need.
But it's good quality of life for them.
So, absolutely. So when this factory worker faces the idea of $25, $30 as a copay when they see a physician, or $20, $30, or $50, $100 to fill a prescription, chances are they either will not fill it, or they fill it but they will use half dose, whatever, which can be dangerous. Continuity of care is compromised also. If you're diabetic, you're hypertensive. I'm not talking about just healthy people. The health visit, I think is overrated. I'm talking about when you have a disease diagnosed, you really need to follow up by your primary care doc, by your internist to manage that.
Well, even before getting diagnosed, people who don't have a lot of money can't even sometimes get in anywhere. They don't sometimes even have transportation or a way to get care. So just, you know, lower income people do struggle just to get to a physician.
So we're concluding that if you have low income, your health can be compromised.
Absolutely.
Especially that Medicaid has a limit on who to cover. You have to be really poor. I think you have to be 120% of the poverty line to qualify for Medicaid. But even then, there is a spin down, right?
Well, there's some people. I don't see a lot of spin downs anymore, but most of them are being bounced over to the Medicaid HMOs. And the Medicaid HMOs are just like, you know, we talked in a prior episode about pre-certifications. Talk about pre-certifications. My goodness. When it goes to the Medicare HMO, they are on it to control costs like no other. And there is not a single Medicaid HMO that we can get a pre-cert done within 24 hours.
So we are reaching a conclusion, which is the growth, the exponential growth in the healthcare expenditure, which is currently 17% of the GMP, right? That growth, not only it is affecting the pocket of the employers, endangering this future of Social Security, it actually also is affecting the health of people negatively, individuals. Right?
Right.
What are we doing about it?
Well, what we're doing, we're doing our part by offering on-site clinics to employers and getting better access, no cost to the employee, meaning the access to the healthcare provider is free, the medications are free, the labs are free, everything is free in the clinic, and they can be seen as often as they want. So we're doing our part in trying to work with employers and getting their employees covered, which I don't even know how this ever became a thing. You and I have talked about this before, as to why are employers even supposed to be covering health care for their employees? How did that even start? I dabbled in that.
That started after World War II. During World War II, men were fighting, and women were making bullets and guns and machine guns and airplanes, right? And when the guys came back home, they told the women, get out of here, right? Actually, no. They all get married. Some of them want to go to school and study, and that was a great generation. And of course, it was automatic that when women get married, they want to form family, and there was a labor shortage because there was a huge boom in the economy. All of a sudden, the military-industrial complex start transforming into a service-oriented, start being transformed into producing goods for the domestic use rather than to fight the enemy and kill people. And there was big competition. So somebody came with the idea.
So part of the competition, you've got to be better than somebody else, so you offer the clinics. I knew the clinics were born back then, but I was talking about healthcare.
The insurance, yes. That's when the insurance was born, where people start paying or giving like a part of the package of employing people that they will provide them with health insurance.
So why, you know, we all need to get to work. So why don't the employers pay for our auto insurance?
Well, I think what happens...
Right? I mean, if we're going to go that direction...
What happens in the human being, especially in the U.S. culture, is somehow when we create laws or come up with a new thing, it's very hard to eliminate them. Have you ever heard the Congress discussing eliminating laws that are redundant?
Recently,
no.
Right?
Because recently...
Isn't Trump
the ACA?
Trump said that for every one...
Regulations.
Oh, okay.
Those are regulations. And Trump is a different beast. I mean, he knows... He knows these facts, like you create sometimes laws simply because a politician wants to have his resume thickened a little bit with a law that can be absolutely redundant. Remember when a state representative wanted to introduce a law that employee of any private doctor's office have to have a name tag with their name and their sexual orientation and their, no, not that one, their job description, whatever. When I told her, stay off my oil, stay off my back. This is redundant. But it is to thicken their resume because that will probably get them into chairmanship of a committee, whatever. When you create these laws or these methods, it becomes a fact. Currently, employers, what do they do to hire talents? Assign a bonus. A well-trained physician who is smart, some places will grab them and pay all their college debt. In return, he or she will have to work for so many years. So health insurance is becoming part of our culture. And if you look in the last 15 years, employers are retracting gradually. You know how it works in America. You just cannot change things like overnight.
Right, right.
You do gradually. So you look now, 15, 20 years ago, GM, Ford, you name it, they would pay 100% of the premium for healthcare.
Forever and ever, after retirement.
Exactly.
Yes.
Now, it's rare to find an employer who pays 100% of the premium. I'm not talking about the out-of-pocket and the deductible. No, just the premium. A lot of the times... The employee pays 50% of the premium in addition to. The idea was when you put the patients in the driver's seat, that you lower cost. I think that was dumb. I think anybody who believes in that is really not thinking clearly, because what's happening is you are a patient. You go to a physician and tell you, here's what you need. Right?
Right.
Do you bargain with that physician?
Of course I do.
You're unique. You would bargain.
We're getting a lot of patients that are actually, they want us to be transparent. And there's not a whole lot of people out there in healthcare, especially hospitals. They're not transparent at all. Everyone who comes into, whether it's our Gabriel Cancer Center, our Liberty Clinic for primary care, or even to our employers, they all know the cost up front. We're completely transparent before we do anything. And that is not common. That's totally atypical.
I agree. The affluent, the more critical people are seeking alternatives. The majority of people still believe whatever a nurse or a doctor tell them. But there is a growing minority who are skeptical of the motives, sometimes. Those are the same people who...
Listen to our radio programs.
Who listen to our radio programs. That's
exactly.
Right. Those are the exact audience. So things are changing, but very, very slowly. I think what we're doing with the on-site clinics is probably the best way.
Well, we cut out everyone in between. We cut out every single middleman that can put their little touch on, whether it's the medication, the lab, whatever. We're taking all out of the whole middle. We're going straight from providing care, providing medications to the employer, especially pharmacies out of it, the insurance companies out of it, the consultants out of it, the brokers are out of it. Everybody is completely
done.
So
for the public, for those listeners, for those who don't know how the on-site clinics work, we have a company called EHCS, Employers Healthcare Savings. What we do, we go to employers, usually factory, and we tell them, okay, let's build a clinic in the factory so that patients are seen at work. Remember, that by itself provides an awesome access.
Yeah, because they don't have to take a day off of work.
Because
when
you call the family doc, sometimes they say, oh, I can't see you until 2-3 days from now. Some of you might say, oh, you're out of your mind. Some family docs say, we're booked for 2 weeks.
2 weeks, yeah.
Well, this is one thing we say, no, patients will be seen the same day. That's number one. Number two, we actually entice the patients to be seen. Now, in the doctor's office, you entice patients to see them, you generate revenues. In our case, no. We get paid, meaning ESCS, the clinic gets paid a fixed amount of money by the employer. They want 8 hours a week, 8 hours a week. In return, we see their employees unlimited number of times. If somebody wants to be seen twice a day, we will see them twice a day. Because I believe, and I think every single reasonable person would believe, that if patients have access to care and paying nothing for a visit is really access, then those people, they will have no reason not to go to the clinic and be seen unless they are one of those who just want to be hurt, which aren't many of those.
Right. And so in this case, even though that they're lower income, and usually the factory workers don't make a whole lot of money, in this case, we're actually turning the tables. We're turning the tables that now they're going to have better outcomes, yet they're not making any more than their cohort across the street working for a company who does not have the clinics.
Yeah, you know, Shelley, you just mentioned one thing. Our program is geared into low income. It just reminds me of an article you sent me last week. It's a company in Memphis, Tennessee, that they provide on-site clinic for Goldman Sachs.
Yes.
Guys, I'm sure many of you know Goldman Sachs. The average person who works there make about $2-3 million a year.
Really? So, is it that high? God.
Those are Goldman Sachs. They make a lot of money. And they have this on-site clinic for them. They even bring specialists there. Very, very expensive, but they can afford it.
Right.
They can afford it. The employer can afford it. They bring a masseuse and they bring...
Is that healthcare?
It is. They bring a dietitian. In fact, that day, it was Wall Street or somewhere. There's an orthopedic surgeon who come there because they have exercise room in case they sprain their ankle in the exercise room so that the orthopedic surgeon will... Yes.
So they're going to do surgery right now?
We are not doing that, shall we? All we're doing is, as you said, these common folks, the factory workers, who are precious people, by the way. Precious people, because they produce the product. And when we bring healthcare to their seat, they walk a few steps from their desk or from their assembly line or from their conveyor belt to their clinic, and we don't let them wait.
No, they're from the time they leave their site to go to the clinic and back is typically 20 minutes.
And let's say they come there with a cough and the healthcare provider is a doctor or nurse practitioner think that they might be having beginning of pneumonia, bronchitis. You grab antibiotic from the shelf because we have a pharmacy there and you give it to them. Guess how much they pay?
Zero.
Zero.
Yep.
Can you imagine you go to the family doc, number one, you have to wait for a couple of days, and you go to the waiting room and they are full of magazines and TV because they expect people to sit there and get bored. So you provide magazines and TV. And then you see the doc. And the doc always will order some blood test, and they give you a prescription, and you go to the pharmacy, and you wait to the pharmacy.
But wait back up for the lab tests? Usually they have to schedule time at the hospital to get those lab tests done.
Oh, my gosh, yeah, to draw the blood.
Yeah.
So we contract all that into a 5 minutes process, right? Sometimes we do the blood work, and actually when we do that blood work at the clinics, the patient pays how much out of pocket?
Zero.
We
always do it. We don't sometimes do blood work. We always do it.
On these on-site clinics, there is no financial transaction. There is no, Mr. X, Mr. Smith, you owe $20. There is none of that. And the employer also doesn't go out to the employee and say, hey, you, because the employer subsidizes totally. Why do they do that? Because we're saving them a lot of money.
Again, cutting out all the middlemen.
Cutting out all the middlemen, both for the drugs, the pharmacy, and for the lab.
And we negotiated rates for the lab.
And what's important is the assembly line is still functioning. Some of these employers have, like even if you have 400 or 500 employees, there are many employees that their spot is critical. And if they take off, the process can be disturbed. We are minimizing that disturbance. More importantly, when people get sick, instead of waiting for a couple of days, and especially if they have out-of-pocket or a copay, You know how we are humans? I'll just ride through this. Maybe milk and honey and some tea and coffee, whatever, or back massage, whatever. Then it will help. And then also after 3-4 days, temperature went up to 102, 103, or blood pressure went up to whatever. And then that results in what? Emergency room visit, hospitalization. And that's where the healthcare cost is. And we are minimizing that. And the employer is paying for, of course, the employer, they have a predictability. Beginning of the year, they say, oh, we need 10 hours a week. Fine. Here's the cost. 10 hours a week, and we are there 10 hours a week. Isn't that awesome?
Right.
And especially these are the employers who are self-funded. That ties into our topic. This, the process we're doing, is actually the antagonistic thing to the fact that low income correlates with poor access to care.
Like I said, we're turning the tables. Now we're these patients who would not otherwise have this access, they can be seen and have their medication as much as they want. So it'd be interesting to do a study now that we have several years under our belts with some of our employers. It'd be interesting to try to do a study on looking at patient outcomes based on having the clinic and prior to having the clinic, or even those who have not been seen at the clinic versus those being seen at the clinic.
Well, we're collecting data, and I am preparing.
Well, we would have to have the data on the other side with the insurance company as well.
Yeah, I'm thinking about even writing. In fact, I've written already several chapters for another book, A Sick Wallet with Altman. Charlie, before we finish the program, I want to address another area. You know how we human beings, we are supposed to be the stewards of our bodies, right? Religious people say that our bodies is gifted from God, that we have the duty to take care of it. Some of us abuse our bodies. Some of us don't take care of it. Do you think there is a relationship between level of income and how you take care of yourself? Do poor people eat a diet or are diet conscious as affluent people are?
Absolutely not. You know, it takes me back to many, many, many years ago when I was grocery shopping, when they used to have the welfare, the food stamps.
They still do.
Well, I think it's a credit card now.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, so that way nobody can tell who has food stamps and who doesn't. I think that's why.
Plus also people were selling food stamps for real dollars.
Yeah. But anyhow, it just really blew my mind every time I would go behind someone who was paying for their groceries with food stamps, that in their grocery cart they had a box of those pre-made potatoes that all you had to do is add water and put in the microwave. You know, that's back then. This was like a long time ago. Was like $4 or $5 a box. Well, $4 or $5 for a bag of potatoes would get you probably 20 pounds of potatoes. This was enough for maybe two people for one serving. For two people, they would have, you know, pre-made everything, you know, soups, and they didn't have any like good, you know, produce, whole fruit produce
or
anything.
How about today? Has that changed?
I can't tell who's paying with food stamps though.
Okay, let me twist the question a different way. Do people of low income, do they value their life and their longevity as well as the affluent ones do?
Well, you're talking about low income versus affluent.
Yes.
So affluent meaning just high income, but
correct.
But there's a correlation too with high income is.
What I'm trying to get at, Shelley, is if life is good, you want to live longer. Which means you will try to do things like maintain good body weight, maintain good exercise, make sure you don't have high blood pressure if you do get treated, diet, you are more careful instead of ordering pizza 3 times a day and chips 6 times a day, you will be more eating like what you eat, carrots and turnip and
red beets.
Red beets, yeah, that's the one. That's the point I'm making. Let me give you a small anecdote. When I was growing up in Iraq, by the way, I lived in Iraq from the age of 0 until the age of 29. Okay, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I ran away and never been back. I remember it was all war zone. I mean, we have the war in the north. We have the there was a period where there was a coup almost every week in Iraq. And there was poverty, despite the fact that it is the richest land in the world. It really is. Seven rivers, that tiny little land, seven rivers, floating on oil, uranium, you name it. Yet there was a lot of poverty. And when I remember people talking in those days, death wasn't really big thing. Yeah, whatever. You know, like life really wasn't worth living.
Well, there's a lot of war, too, and people got killed at a very young age.
But people were not enjoying life. Part of it is because of the poverty. Now, if you look at the U.S., I really want to live another 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years because life is so good. You know, when people ask me, how are you doing? I'm living the dream. I don't think I felt that way, although I wasn't poor in Iraq. I was a physician. My ex-wife was a physician. But still, our income was really mediocre because as the government decided. And I didn't value life, probably didn't take care of myself as much as I do now. The question is that the same thing happening in the U.S.? People on welfare, on Medicaid, are we doing something that, because they don't pay good... When they're very poor, they don't pay as much attention to their health.
Well, we're trying. We're trying to, you know, with based on these types of educational episodes, we're trying to get to educate the people about healthcare and trying to reduce the cost of healthcare. That's the whole thing. So maybe if the lower income people would take some of these episodes and what we're trying to tell them to heart.
I will challenge you with one question, Shelley. That question will be the topic for maybe another week. And that is the employers are doing their best to promote access at lower cost to their employees. Are the government agencies, meaning the cities, the counties, even Medicaid, are they doing something similar that lowers the cost and yet improves access and outcomes?
That is another topic.
Because we're seeing something different, the mentality of the government agencies compared to the attitude and mentality of the private sector. Next week, maybe?
Yep. We'll
talk about that? Thank you, Shelley.
Thank you.
It was very informative again.